Indeed. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Hello. How the bloody hell are ya? Where the bloody hell are ya? Welcome back to episode 8 of the Universal Language of Music podcast, coming to you from a very unique location, the road. I am currently driving in this vast outback landscape that is known as the Pilbara. And I'm on a 480-kilometre stretch right now, driving from office to office. And I tell you what, I'm a little bit bored. So I thought, what better idea than to slap on me lavalier mic, chuck on the GoPro on the windscreen, and just kind of sit here and gasbag to you all as I drive through this vast expanse of nothing. The current work that I do, I do have to travel a fair bit, and so I'm currently driving from one office to another office, 480 kilometres. I'm about 120 kilometres in to this drive, and there's really not a lot to do. I am a little bit bored. There's one town, so about 80 kilometres from the town I started in. There's another town called Parabidoo. I've just left Parabidoo, had some lunch there. I'm now on this sort of 290 kilometer stretch to a petrol station. I will stop at the petrol station briefly, and then another 120 kilometers until I make it to my pseudo home of Onslow. You know, Australia is big. God damn, Australia's a large place. I just can't believe, I mean, I can believe it, but it's just massive. Absolutely massive. There is nothing here. Like this town where I kind of live at the moment, Onslow, it's 3.5 hours away. It's 3 hours away from the next town. And that's the closest place to buy, like, you know, socks or any sort of clothes, any like cooking utensil. Onslow does have like a little general store, but geez, it's pretty grim. It also has this like tiny hardware store, which is even grimmer. So just like basic life items up here in the Pilbara can be a very difficult thing to actually try and obtain. But anyway, we are here. I thought this is a good opportunity. I like to drive. I've always liked driving. You know, I was a tour guide for a while, obviously, but I got my license really early on when I was 18 years old. And in Melbourne, we used to go down to the Great Ocean Road over summer. It's like the most epic day trip location. And one time I was there with four of me mates, and we had two cars because we got our probationary license, and we could only allow two people in each car. So me and the other guy, we both were driving, and then we both had one passenger, and we were on this like convoy road trip down to the Great Ocean Road. Sun was shining, windows down, music playing. It was a bloody blast. And we went to the beach, whatever, it was great. And on the way back, we were driving along the freeway, and we were, I can't remember exactly what we were doing, but we were passing items from car to car. So we had I think it was like an ice cream or something, and the passenger was passing it to the driver of the other vehicle. This was obviously very naughty, very silly, and we happened to be going quite slow. It was a two-lane freeway at that point. I got quite slow, and so there was this truck behind us, and it beeped its horn because it said, "What the fuck are you guys doing? Get out of my way." And we said, "Oh yes, very sorry. Okay, anyway." So anyway, we kept carrying on, and then this freeway takes you into Melbourne. It gets more and more lanes. I think it ends up with like five lanes or whatever. So about half an hour later, we're driving, and the other car calls our car, says, "Hey guys, the truck that tooted us about half an hour ago is still following us and is like right on our ass. And sure enough, we looked over and it was like right, it was right up against them, this truck, right up against the ass of this other, of a, the other car in the convoy. So this dude was clearly not happy who was driving the truck. So anyway, I, in all my wisdom and glory and intelligence, I said, "Don't worry, boys, I got this." I drove over to the sort of eyesight of the truck driver and I made a obscene gesture at him. Perhaps I was suggesting what he could perhaps perform on my genitalia. And this didn't go down too well at all with the truck driver, because then he took his turned his attention away from their car and he started going after me. I went in the very right lane and he was in like the very left lane pretty much, and he very quickly sort of swung across. He drove in front of me slightly and then swung across, and he had, I think, two trailers, and the second one almost came over and completely knocked me out. I thought, Jesus Christ, this is not good. I think we might die here. So anyway, we then scooted over around to the other side of him. We thought, that's all right, we'll get out of his way. And he followed us. So then we started staying behind him. And we're like, well, this way, at least this way, he can't sideswipe us. So we'll just stay behind him and whatever. It's all kind of a laugh, but it's like a bit much, but you know, whatever, we're having fun. We're little kids, we'll do whatever we want. Anyway, after another sort of couple of minutes, he brake checked us. He absolutely slammed on his brakes, and I had to quickly like veer to the left quite sharply. And at this point, our sort of humour in the situation was now of sort of growing concern, and we thought, this guy is not happy and has been not happy for like 40 minutes. It was like that movie. What's that movie? Is it Jewel? The crazy truck driver? Anyway, so then we changed up our tactics. I started then violently speeding. And he was also speeding, this truck driver. But he was staying in the sort of right, the second to right lane. And we were in the very left lane now. And my sort of co-pilot, Liam, had a very smart idea. He said, at the next exit, just take it, but don't indicate or anything, and move into it late. I thought, yes, that's a good idea. So then we'll just get rid of him. He'll be up the road. We'll take 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. We'll calm down, have a lime milkshake, and then we'll come back on the road and get home. And so the exit came up, and I went left. And Liam and I were very proud of ourselves. So we were like, yay, yay, look at us celebrating. We've done it. Got rid of him. And then all of a sudden I see him in the rearview mirror absolutely tearing. So somehow he's come from the like second to right lane. He must have cut across the grass once the exit had finished. And now he was right behind us. And now we were adequately shitting ourselves. This was not good at all. We're off the freeway now, and on the sort of exit ramp, it went around this like 90 degree left turn, and I was going like 120 kilometers an hour in my little beat up piece of shit car. And so I was like, I'm gonna have to absolutely rip it. Ripped it around the corner. He followed and he was still right on our ass, but I gained a little bit from the corner. But now there was lots of stress, lots and lots of stress. So now we're on this main road, and I noticed up ahead that there was traffic lights, and turning right was into this little laneway. And I thought, he won't be able to get into that laneway. So if I can just make these lights, I'll be right. And they were green at the time. But I knew, like, if it went red, like, we were fucked, right? He was just going to get out and get his shotgun or whatever. And that was the end for us. So I pumped it as hard as I could. The lights went red, and then about 4 seconds later, I came tearing through, I don't know, like 80, 90 kilometers an hour, and made it through to this laneway. So then me and Liam, we drove up into this little shopping center and we parked, and we were very inconspicuous, and we were very, very relieved. We thought, thank God we got rid of him. But we forgot about the other car. And so James and Nick, who were in that car, they rang us and they said, we followed you. So we were behind the truck. He stopped at the red light and then saw us drive past. We went straight and now he started chasing us. Oh, Jesus Christ. And so then they went the wrong way into this like one-way road. And the truck came, the truck stopped at the exit and was just like waiting for them to leave. And so I don't know, I think they did some sneaky maneuver and went the wrong way illegally down a road. And then eventually we met up and we all got out of the car and said, let's just get home. Let's not stop, let's get home. And so we made it home. We got to the 7-Eleven in Alphington and we all embraced and hugged and thought, we just survived an absolute maniac truck driver. That was genuinely a terrifying, terrifying thing. I don't know what that guy was gonna, he literally tried to kill us like three times. Like genuinely, I don't think they were like warning shots when he went to sideswipe and when he brake checked. There was like intention of death upon us. So there you go, lesson learned, kids. Never convoy on a two-lane freeway. So that's one such story about why I like driving. Another story that happened to me once upon a time. When I was a tour guide, I was driving the bus and we used to drive from a place called Uluru to Coober Pedy. A place called Uluru. You should know what Uluru is. Anyway, we're driving from Uluru to Coober Pedy. It's about 740-kilometer drive. And it was hot. It was real hot. It's like 42, 43 degrees. Anyway, we're about an hour and a half away from making it to Coober Pedy. All very exciting. And one of the tires didn't feel quite right. On the back of the bus. It felt a bit weird as I was driving. And then the reason became apparent because the tire blew up. Literally exploded because it was so hot. So we pulled over and I had to obviously repair this tire. Now there are two tires in the back on each side. And so this was the inner rear left tire. And it's quite difficult to change the tire on a bus. It can be quite hard, particularly when it's 43 degrees and you're on the side of the road, 150 kilometers away from anything or any civilization, water or reception or whatever. So anyway, I got out the jack and I jacked up the bus and we had this toolkit on the bus. It's like a black bag that was cable tied together because to stop all the tools from going loose. Anyway, so I got that out and I was like, if anyone wants to help, please help, because it's quite a difficult process. And this lovely girl from Switzerland was like, I have a Swiss Army knife if you need help. And I did need to help. So I said, yes, please. Can you open the bag? And so she got the knife and she cut the cable ties. And I was holding the other end. And she kind of went straight through one of the cable ties and stabbed me. She stabbed it went in like the webbing, like in between my thumb and index finger. And it hurt. It hurt a lot. There was a lot of blood. A lot of blood. And I like grabbed my wrist, like kept it still, and I said, okay, this is a problem. I've just been stabbed in the outback with a broken down bus. Anyway, one of the girls from Austria on the trip, she happened to be a paramedic and she effectively saved my life. She like tourniqueted my arm or something. And I was very, very faint and very not good. And we had a satellite phone. So I got on the satellite phone and I called my boss who was in Melbourne, what, like 2,500 kilometers away. And we called it Dory. So Dory, I've got a little bit of an issue. I'm here about an hour and a half away from Coober Pedy, in the middle of the desert. The bus has popped a tire and I've kind of been stabbed. And she had a very particular way of dealing with situations, Dory. And so she looked at me. She said on the phone, okay, lovely. And how are you feeling? Well, I'm not feeling great because the bus has broken down and I've been stabbed. Let's not worry about the bus for now. Let's just talk about you, sweetie. Let's just talk about how we're going to get you through this. So tell me what you're feeling. Yeah, again, not feeling great because I've been stabbed. Anyway, I couldn't really complete the call. Now, the other interesting thing is that we were in a hire bus. Usually the buses that we had, they had like a GPS tracker kind of thing in there. So in the office in Melbourne, when situations like this arose, they'd be able to pinpoint where the bus was. But I was in a hire bus, so I couldn't even like properly tell them where I was. Anyway, then I passed out. And then the satellite phone went dead. So we had no charge on the satellite phone. The only thing I was able to communicate to my boss was that I had been stabbed. The bus had popped a tire and I was in somewhere in between Coober Pedy and Uluru. There we were. There we were in the middle of nowhere. So eventually I kind of came to. I was kind of in and out of consciousness, to be fair. There were all the people on the tour were helping me out. They were feeding me dry biscuits. I was having electrolyte water. I was getting fanned. And then a whole group of people were trying to change the tire on the bus. And I was trying to like communicate with them how to do it. But Jesus, I was so out of it that I could see them trying and they were kind of doing the wrong thing every now and then, but I just couldn't like, they worked it out. They did really well in the end, but I couldn't communicate it. I was so dead. I was so dead. Anyway, there was one vehicle stopped on the way, stopped to check and help us, see if we needed help. And it was this Australian guy, this poor girl at the front of the bus. She was, I think, from Germany. And he came to the front of the bus and I was at the back and all the action was happening at the back. He came to the front and he said, "You guys all right?" And she couldn't really speak English that well. She said, yeah, there's a bus, there's a broken tire. And he's like, "Oh mate, I don't know anything about how to fix them. Good luck though." And he walked off and she's like, "Oh, but wait, it's a man, it's a guy. He's fucking been stabbed, help us." But she couldn't communicate to him, so he left. And he drove off, so our one chance of salvation was gone. And it was all getting a bit hairy, a bit dicey. Anyway, these guys managed to put the tyre back on and I was very proud of them. Although I wasn't 100% convinced that it was fixed. But then I was faced with another conundrum, which was I have to now drive. And so it was either I have to drive or some guest on this tour has to drive through the harsh Australian outback, a bus carrying 20 people and a trailer with a shoddy tyre. And I just couldn't, I don't think it's legal, but I think I had to drive. Although I had, probably wasn't legal for me to drive due to all the blood loss. But anyway, I drove and it was my right hand. So I had my right hand like on the roof of the bus. So it was like draining the blood. I was like half conscious. I was slumped down in the seat. I had someone changing gears for me. I had like two people sitting on the engine block of the bus, like fanning me, slapping my cheeks. And we were going very, very slow, but eventually we made it to Coober Pedy and it was just this wild, wild moment of bliss and happiness. We made it to the civilization. We all got pizza that night. I went to the sort of medical center in Coober Pedy, which is barely a room. And I was, yeah, struggling quite a lot. I was kind of in and out of consciousness. And eventually I was conscious enough to ask the nurses for help. I said, "Oh yes, love. We'll just finish our tea and we'll come over and help you." And they came over and they fixed me up and then I was all good. Quite an epic story of almost making the news. A bus full of 20 tourists from overseas has been lost in the middle of the outback. Now that story is very, very cool, but there's one slight detail that I have lied about. So you may think, wow, what, like Ben's that's a pretty awesome story, dude. Like, he got stabbed. It was hot. He'd been driving for 600 kilometers already. He managed to summon the strength to drive another 2 hours to Coober Pedy in the middle of nowhere against the odds. What a guy. Well, the one thing that I lied about is that the Swiss girl who got the knife and tried to open the cable ties and ended up stabbing me was actually not a Swiss girl. It was actually me stabbing myself trying to open the bag. Oh god. But don't let the truth get in the way of good story, right? So yes, many, many tales from the road as I weave my way through this 5-hour drive. The other reason I love driving and I love the open road is music. The music that I can play. Whenever I write music, I do... an eagle. Cool, wedge-tail eagle. Eating a dead kangaroo. Sorry. Whenever I am writing music, I have two tests. I have a piano test and I have a car test. So whenever I make a song, I always will play it on the piano only, and it has to work on the piano for me to kind of keep going with it as an idea. And then the second test is when I'm like putting music all together, the number one place that I really come up with structures and differences and subtleties and melodies and harmonies and new ideas for a song I've been working on is in the car. I love to drive at night and I'll listen to my own tunes and come up with how I can make them better. But then the other element to that is when you're out on the open road, music can complement that feeling of freedom and adventure and openness so well. So it is, quite a poignant and relevant a thing for me to be doing as I start to talk about episode 8, which is the art of songwriting. So I touched on it a bit there about how I kind of piece together a song, but I think the most important thing to know about songwriting is that everyone does it differently. And it is an art. It's a beautiful art, and it can be... It can take on many shapes and forms. You can write a song that means something, but it sounds like it means something else. There's beautiful subtleties to writing music. I talked about in the audiobook for anyone that listened, that, you know, there's this rule of writing music, which is don't give them 4, give them 2+2. And you see a lot of movies like that as well. A lot of paintings, a lot of videos. You don't, as a viewer, want the answer to just be like spelled out to you straight away, you know, or in its entirety. You want that interpretation. Like, it kind of leaves you. It's what grips you, right? When you watch something. It's the same thing in music. You know, you're not trying to tell someone how to feel. You're not trying to tell someone how to react to this music. And I've had this a couple of times when I've showed people like some demos in my inner sanctum. I've showed them demos of unreleased music, and they say it doesn't, like, I can see what you're writing about, but the instrumentation doesn't really complement it. Like, you're kind of writing about something happy, but the song's quite sad. And I like that. I mean, that's what it's all about, is I'm not telling you how to react to my song, you know. That's for your interpretation. And you see that everywhere. You know, there's three major components to writing a song, which is lyrics, structure, and melody. And, you know, you ask any musician or any artist, the hardest thing to do is lyrics. Structure is kind of easy, and melody's kind of easy. Not kind of easy, but anyone can make a song. Anyone with like rudimentary musical knowledge would be able to write a song. And I touched on this in the audiobook, but I focused a lot on pop music for a very specific reason, because melody in pop is is not very difficult. There are all these rules. There are all these like unwritten rules of how to write a successful pop song. And it goes with this four chord theory. So essentially you have 12 notes that you can choose from to write a song, right? There's only 12 notes that exist. There's different octaves, there's different pitches, whatever. But there's only 12 notes that you can choose from on any instrument to write a song, in Western music, anyway. So of those 12 notes, you have these things called scales. Scales will be a percentage of those notes put together to make a sort of sound, a melodic pattern. From scales, you can get chords. Chords is where you use more than one note of that scale. And then that's kind of how you make chords, make songs. You choose a whole bunch of chords, you put them together, you change their arrangement, whatever, and then you got a song. But there is this rule in pop, this sort of unspoken rule, the 1-4-5-6. So if you take, for example, the scale of C, so the notes in a C scale is C, D, E, F, G, A, B, in that order. So C is the root note of that scale, of a C scale, and C is also the first note of that scale. D is second, E is third, so on and so forth. So if you take the C, which is the first chord of C scale, the F, which is the fourth, the G major, which is the fifth, and an A minor, which is the sixth, they're the four chords that you can use. And you can put them in pretty much any arrangement, 4-5-1-6, 6-5-4-1, 1-4-5-6, 1-5-4-6. And that is pretty much the majority of any number one pop hit you've ever heard in the last 50 years uses that arrangement. So it's really interesting. Like, I always think if anyone wants to start learning music or they want to start playing an instrument, if you grab a guitar, an acoustic guitar, and you get a capo, which is an accessory, and you learn eight chords, you learn C, D, E, F, G, A, B, you can pretty much play any pop song that exists in the world ever. The capo changes the key, so if you've got, if it's like a D minor, D major scale or whatever, or like an A flat major scale, you just put the capo on a different a fret that transposes it. You play any of those C, D, E, F, G, A, B chords in what they're supposed to be, arranged as per the song structure, and then you've got any pop song. One really interesting example of my guiltiest pleasure of favorite artists, Tay-Tay, my darling Taylor Swift. She is like the master of the four chord theory and simplistic melodies to create absolute bangers. In her, my favorite album of hers, 1989, she uses over 230 one note melodies. So in each line or each bar or whatever, she uses one note. Blank space. So it's gonna be forever. Da 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 da. Well, that goes up a bit. But yeah, they're pretty much like, they're really simple. I'm sorry for having to sing Blank Space by Taylor Swift and you all had to hear that, but there you go. If you think about her songs like Shake It Off, Blank Space, Bad Blood, they've all got these real simplistic melodies, but she does it in a way that is captivating. You know, it's arranged so well, and if you put those songs through the piano test, they wouldn't pass it. You know, if you just played piano with them, it wouldn't pass it. But it's so intricately and delicately put together with all these different instruments and little subtleties and the silence as well of a lot of the songs. You know, silence is a brilliant songwriting tactic because it draws you in, it allows you to take a breath, it captures a moment. It's really profound in songwriting. It leaves this interpretation to the listener or the viewer of putting together that message that the songwriter's trying to get across. So Tay-Tay, my guilty pleasure, keep being brilliant. I love you. I love you a lot. Did I go to a Taylor Swift concert with a t-shirt that I had made with a photo of me and Taylor Swift photoshopped in? Yes. Do I regret it? No. Was I like the only man on the ground floor at that stadium? Yes. Was everyone staring at me? Yes. Do I care? No. Because haters gonna hate. Yeah, Tay-Tay, I love you. I love you. So yes, Taylor Swift, master of pop. Importantly, I want to just mention that this art of songwriting, I only went into pop music because it's so obvious, it's so eminent in the way that there is this art to writing pop songs. Coldplay are another, you know, terrific example of pop writing. They have a very unique structure. They do a few things which aren't really matched by anyone else. They do a lot of stuff on like the sixth note of a scale, and then they do a lot of descending lines. So they'll play like, let's take the C scale again, for example. They'll say like A minor, they'll go from A minor to G major to F major to C, descending, which kind of invokes this thought of sadness. But really they're writing about something, you know, quite uplifting. They've got this power, Coldplay. They've completely changed their sound since their debut album in 1998. They've been relevant for 20 years. They've completely changed their sound. It's gone from about, you know, Chris Martin's sort of woes as a human and a lover to this sort of real, like, humanitarian vibrance in their song. They talk about life and they talk about togetherness and unity, and that's reflected in all their marketing, that's reflected in all the colours that they use in their album artwork. It's reflected in those bands, you know, you get the bands. If you ever see Coldplay live concert on YouTube or something, these like colour, light up colourful bands that all beat together as one and make these beautiful patterns. It's all part of the art of what they're trying to do. And they've, you know, amazing. 80 million albums I think they've sold over 20 years. It's wild. But yeah, you know, pop music, it's not for everyone. I think the really interesting thing about pop is, you know, in all honesty, I'm not a huge fan of pop, but it has its place because it has that sort of familiarity. It has that sort of, you know what it's going to be, you know, it's there's not much variation to pop. There's a really interesting guy, oh my God, I can't remember his name, this Swedish guy, Max someone, oh God, look at me, absolute nuffy of music knowledge, but he is this Swedish guy and he's a songwriter and he's written like 23 number one singles, for various artists like Katy Perry and Ed Sheeran and Taylor Swift and Pink and all these people. And he's just like this master of creating melodies and creating structures that people listen to over and over and over again. There's a rule, that there's kind of a rule that he follows. You kind of know that it's one of his songs. I clearly don't know because I don't even know his name. Can't remember it. But yeah, it's really interesting. You know, there's a simplistic relativity, a simplistic sort of relevance to it that's familiar. It makes you comfortable. And then there's just slight variations. You know, there's always a good hook. It's quite an easy hook. A lot of stepwise motion stuff. So, notes that go up one by one. There's no big leaps or big jumps in a lot of the songwriting, a lot of the lyric singing and the instrument hooks. So that's really interesting, you know, that to know that there's this like random dude and he's very private about everything. So private that people don't even know his name. / I don't know his name. So yeah, I've just talked about pop music in this sort of first instance because it's a very eminent and obvious example of this sort of art to songwriting. But you know, throughout this series, I mean, I'm just doing these sort of introductory ones now, and then as this series really gains legs over the next, you know, couple of years, I'm going to deep dive into specific genres as well as specific cultures, and really learn about how they sort of make music and this art to their songwriting, which encapsulates what that genre or what that culture is about. So stay tuned for that. That's coming. There's a lot of work going on here. So yeah, that's all coming. The music is this constant, you know, it's this ever-present presence in everyone's life. It's got this ability, incredible ability, to bring people together. You know, it doesn't give you four, it gives you 2 + 2, and you make 5 from that 4. You know, you interpret it your own way, but you also do it in this realm of like unison. You do it because you know that there's all these other people feeling that as well. They're interpreting it in their own way as well, and it's just this magical art form. It's potentially undervalued in society, what it can do for individuals, what it can do for collective groups, what it can do to cultures, and what it can do to humanity. It's real nice. So thank you for joining me. I'm gonna go bop out to some Taylor Swift for the next 3.5 hours. The camera has overheated about 4 times. I don't know if this format's been good or not, but it's been good for me to pass the time. You know, it's 32 degrees outside. I've got, what have I got? 300 and something kilometers to go. So yes, I will keep enjoying it. Couple of dead cows, couple of dead kangaroos. I mean, some alive ones as well, which is probably more an interesting thing to comment on. But yeah, if you're going for a road trip, maybe think about starting a podcast. I'd like to hear what you think. If you've got anything you'd like to add to this, if there are any genres that you like in particular, in fact, I'd like you to tell me what your favorite Taylor Swift song is, and I'd like to explain to me why it isn't Blank Space. Love you, Tay-Tay. Haters gonna hate. Peace out, friends.